who hasn't thought about killing themselves as a kid? How can you grow up in this world and not think about it? It's an option taken by a lot of successful people. Ernest Hemingway, Socrates, Jesus. Even before high school, I thought that it would be a cool thing to do if I ever got really famous. If I kept making my maps, for instance, and some art collector came across them and decided to make them worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, if I killed myself at the height of that, they'd be worth millions of dollars, and I wouldn't be responsible for them anymore. I'd have left behind something that spoke for itself, like the Brooklyn Bridge. I thought, "You haven't really lived until you've contemplated suicide," I said. I thought like it would be good to have a reset switch, like on the video games, to start again and see if you could go a different way. Dr. Barney said, "It sounds as if you've been battling this depression for a long time." I stopped. No, I hadn't. Yes, I had. Dr. Barney said nothing. Then he said, "You have a flat affect." "What's that?" "You're not expressing a lot of emotion about these things." "Oh, well, they're too big." "I see. Let's talk a little about your family." "Mom designs postcards. Dad works in health insurance," I said.
"They're together?"
"Yes."
"Any brothers or sisters?"
"One sister, younger, Sarah. She's worried about me."
"How so?"
"She's always asking me whether I'm good or bad, and when I tell her I'm bad, she says, 'Craig, please get better. Everyone is trying.' Things like that. It breaks my heart."
"But she cares."
"Yeah."
"Your family supports you coming here?"
"When I told them about it, they didn't waste any time. They say it's a chemical imbalance, and if I get the right drugs for it, I'll be fine."
I looked around the office at the names of the right drugs.
If I got prescribed every drug that Dr. Barney repped, I'd be like an old man counting out pills every morning.
"You're in high school, correct?"
"Yes."
"And your sister?"
"Fourth grade."
"You realize there are a lot of parental consent forms that need to be filled out for us to help you?"
"They'll sign everything. They want me to get better."
"Supportive family environment," Dr. Barney scratched on his pad. He turned and gave his version of a smile, which was a slight affirmative, the lips barely curled, the lower lip out in front. "We're going to get through this, Craig. Now, from a personal standpoint, why do you think you have this depression?"
"I can't compete at school," I said. "All the other kids are too much smarter."
"What's the name of your high school?"
"Executive Pre-Professional High School."
"Right, I've heard of it. Lots of homework."
"Yeah. When I come home from school, I know I have all this work to do, but then my head starts the cycling."
"The cycling?"
"Going over the same thoughts over and over. When my thoughts race against each other in a circle."
"Suicidal thoughts?"
"No, just thoughts of what I have to do. Homework. And it comes up to my brain and I look at it and think, I'm not going to be able to do that. And then it cycles back down and the next one comes up.
And then things come up like, you should be doing more extracurricular activities,
because I should. I don't do near enough. And that gets pushed down and it's replaced with the big one. What college are you going to, Craig? Which is like the doomsday question, because I'm not going to get into a good one."
"What would a good one be?"
"Harvard, Yale, duh."
"Uh-huh."
"And then the thoughts keep turning and I lie down on my bed and think them. And I used to not be able to lie down anywhere. I used to always be up doing something, but once the cycling starts, I can waste hours, just lying and looking at the ceiling, and time goes slowly and really fast at the same time, and then it's midnight and I have to go to sleep because no matter what I do, I have to be at school the next day. I can't let them know what's happening to me."
"Do you have difficulty sleeping?"
"Sometimes not. When I do, it's bad, though. I lie there thinking about how everything I've done is a failure, death and failure, and there's no hope for me except being homeless, because I'm never going to be able to hold a job because everyone else is so much smarter."
"But they're not all, are they, Craig? Some of them have to be not as smart as you."
"Well, those are the ones who I don't have to worry about. But plenty of people are, and they're going to kick my ass everywhere. Like my friend Aaron,
Who's that?
My best friend. He has a girlfriend, too, who I'm friends with.
How do you feel about her?
Not so much, one way or the other.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Barney wrote on his pad. Anyway, I tried to sum up. I was lying to this guy. That meant we really knew each other. It's all about living a sustainable life. I don't think I'm going to be able to have one.
A sustainable life?
That's right, with a real job and a real house and everything.
And a family?
Of course, you have to have that. What kind of success are you if you don't have that?
Uh-huh.
So to have that, I have to start shaping up now. But I can't because of this crap that's going on in my head. And I know that these things I'm thinking don't make sense, and I think, stop.
But you can't stop.
I can't stop.
Well, he tapped his Prozac pen. You know that your thoughts aren't thoughts you want to have. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Do you ever hear voices?
Uh-oh. Now we were getting into the real meat.
Dr. Barney was cuddly enough, but I was sure that if you gave him a straitjacket, he'd be able to handle it just fine, coaxing you into it and leading you to a very comfortable room with soft walls and a bench where you could sit looking at a one-way mirror and telling people you were Scrooge McDuck.
How did they make one-way mirrors anyway?
I knew I had problems, but I also knew I wasn't crazy. I wasn't schizo. I didn't hear voices.
Well, I heard that one voice, the army guy, but that was my voice. Just me trying to motivate myself. I was not going to get thrown in the loony bin.
No voices, I said.
Lied, technically. Lied again.
Craig, do you know about brain chemistry?
I nodded. I'd skipped ahead in the bio textbook.
Do you know how depression works?
Yeah. It was a simple explanation. You have these chemicals in your brain that carry messages from each brain cell to the next brain cell. They're called neurotransmitters, and one of them is serotonin.
Excellent.
Which scientists think is the neurotransmitter related to depression. If you have a lack of this chemical in your system, you can start to get depressed.
Dr. Barney nodded.
Now, I kept on, after the serotonin passes a message from one brain cell to the next, it gets sucked back into the first brain cell to be used again. But the problem is sometimes your brain cells do too much sucking, I chuckled, and they don't leave enough serotonin in your system to carry the messages. So they have these drugs called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors that keep your brain from taking too much serotonin back to get more of it in your system. So you feel better.
Craig, excellent. You know a lot. We're going to put you on medication that is going to do just that.
Great.
Before I write a prescription, do you have any questions for me?
Sure I did. Dr. Barney looked happy. He had a nice gold ring and shiny glasses.
How'd you get started in this? I asked.
I'm always interested to know how people got started.
He leaned forward, his paunch disappearing in his shadow. He had huge gray eyebrows and a somber face. After college, I went through my own shit and decided that all the physical suffering in the world couldn't compare to mental anguish, he said. And when I got myself cleared up, I decided to help other people.
You got yours cleared up?
I did.
What did you have?
He sighed. What you have.
Yeah?
To a T. I leaned forward. Our faces were 2 feet away from one another.
How did you fix it?
I begged.
He tilted the side of his mouth up.
Same way you will. On my own.
What? What kind of answer was that? I scowled at him. I was here for help. I wasn't here to figure this out on my own. If I wanted to figure it out on my own, I'd be taking a bus tour of Mexico.
We're going to start you on Zoloft, Dr. Barney said.
Oh, ho.
It's a great medication. Helps a lot of people. It's an SSRI. It's going to affect the serotonin in your brain, like you said. But you can't expect an instant effect because it takes weeks to get into your system.
Weeks?
3 to 4 weeks.
Isn't there a fast-acting version?
You take the Zoloft with food once a day. We'll start you on 50 milligrams. The pills make you feel dizzy, but that's the only side effect.
except for sexual side effects. Dr. Barney looked up from his pad.
Are you sexually active?
Ha ha ha.
No.
All right.
Also, Craig, I think that you would benefit from seeing someone.
I know. Don't think I haven't tried. I'm not really good at talking to girls.
Girls? No, I meant therapists. You should start seeing a therapist.
What about you?
I'm a psychopharmacologist. I refer you to the therapists.
What a racket.
Okay. Let's take a look for one. He opened up what looked like the white pages on his desk and started rattling off names and addresses to me as if they made a difference. Dr. Abrams in Brooklyn, Dr. Fieldstone in Manhattan, Dr. Bach in Manhattan. I thought Dr. Bach was a cool name, so we set up an appointment with him. I missed it, though, because later in the week I was doing a history assignment and I was so embarrassed that I didn't call to cancel with Dr. Bach that I never went to see him again. The next time with Dr. Barney, we had to pick another shrink, and then another, and then another. Among them, the little old lady who asked if I had been sexually abused, and the beautiful redhead who asked why I had so many problems with women, and the man with the handlebar mustache who suggested hypnosis. It was like I was dating, except I didn't get to make out with any of the girls, and I was also bi because I met up with guys.
I like talking to you, I told Dr. Barney.
Well, you'll be seeing me in a month to check up on how the medication is treating you.
You don't do therapy?
The other doctors are great, Craig. They'll help.
Dr. Barney stood up. He was about 5'5", and shook my hand with a soft, meaty grip. He handed me the Zoloft prescription and instructed me to get it right away, which I did, even before taking the subway home.
Chapter 13. The Zoloft worked, and it didn't take weeks. It worked as soon as I took it that first day. I don't know how, but suddenly I felt good about my life. What the hell? I was a kid. I had plenty more to do. I'd been through some crap, but I was learning from it. These pills were going to bring me back to my old self, able to tackle everything, functional and efficient. I'd be talking to girls in school and telling them that I was messed up, that I had had problems, but that I'd dealt with them, and they'd think I was brave and sexy and ask me to call them. It must have been a placebo effect, but it was a great placebo effect. If placebo effects were this good, they should just make placebos the way to treat depression. Maybe that's what they did. Maybe Zoloft was cornstarch. My brain said, yes, I am back, and I thought the whole thing was over. This was my first experience with a fake shift. Dastardly stuff. You do well on a test, you make a girl laugh, you have a particularly lower body simmering experience after talking online and rushing to the bathroom. You think it's all over. That just makes it worse when you wake up the next day and it's back with a vengeance to show you who's boss. I feel great, I told Mom when I got home.
What did the doctor say?
I'm on Zoloft. I showed her the bottle.
Huh. A lot of people at my office take this.
I think it's working.
It can't be working already, honey. Calm down.
I took my Zoloft every day. Some days I woke up and got out of bed and brushed my teeth like any normal human being. Some days I woke up and lay in bed and looked at the ceiling and wondered what the hell the point was of getting out of bed and brushing my teeth like any normal human being. But I always managed to take it. I never tried to take more than one either. It wasn't that kind of drug.
It didn't make you feel anything. But then after a month, just like they said, I started to feel that there was a buoy keeping me upright when I got bad. If the cycling started, there was a panic button attached to my good thoughts. I could click it and think about my family, my sister, my friends, my time online, the good teachers at school, the anchors. I even spent time with Sarah. She was so smart, smarter than me for sure. She'd be able to handle what I was going through without seeing any doctors. Her homework bordered on algebra, even though it was only fourth grade, and I helped her with it, sometimes doodling spirals or patterns on the side of the pages while she worked. I didn't do maps anymore.
Those are cool, Craig, she would say.
Thanks. Why don't you do art more?
I don't have time.
Silly. You always have time.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Time is a person-made concept.
Really? Where'd you hear that?
I made it up.
I don't know if that's true.
We all live within time. It rules us. I use my time how I want, so I rule it.
You should be a philosopher, Sarah.
Ugh, no. What's that? Interior design.
My eating came back around. First coffee yogurt, then bagels, then chicken. Sleeping, meanwhile, was two steps forward, one step back. That's one of the golden rules of psychology. The shrinks say that everything in our lives is two steps forward, one step back, to justify that time you, say, drank paint thinner and tried to throw yourself off a roof. That was just taking a step back. Some nights I wouldn't sleep, but then for the next two I slept great. I even dreamed. Flying dreams. Dreams of meeting Nia on a bus and talking with her, looking at her, seeing her off a few stops down the line. Never having sex with her, unfortunately. Dreams that I was jumping off a bridge and landing on giant fuzzy dice, bouncing across the Hudson River from Manhattan to New Jersey, laughing and looking back at which numbers I had landed on. When I couldn't sleep, though, it sucked. I'd think about the fact that my parents weren't going to leave me much money, and they might not have enough to send my sister to college, and I had a history assignment to do, and how come I didn't go to the library today, and I hadn't checked my email in days. What was I missing in there? Why did I fret so much about email? Why was I sweating into the pillow? It wasn't hot. How come I had smoked pot and jerked off today? I had developed a rule. On the days you jerk off, you don't smoke pot, and on the days you smoke pot, you don't jerk off. Because the days you do both are the ones that become truly wasted days. Days where you take three steps back. I started to work in phases a little bit. For 3 weeks I'd be cool, fine, functional. Even at my most functional, I wasn't someone you'd pay a lot of attention to. You wouldn't see me in the halls at school and go, "There he goes, Craig Gilner. I wonder what he's up to." You'd see me and go, "What does that poster say behind that guy? Is the anime club meeting today?" But I was there. That was the important thing. I was at school, as opposed to home in my bed. Then I'd get bad. Usually it happened after a chill session at Aaron's house, one of those glorious times when we got really high and watched a really bad movie, something with Will Smith where we could point out all the product placements and plot holes. I'd wake up on the couch in Aaron's living room. I would sleep there while he slept with Nia in the back, and I'd want to die. I'd feel wasted and burnt, having wasted my time and my body and my energy and my words and my soul. I'd feel like I had to get home right now to do work, but didn't have the ability to get to the subway. I'd just lie here for 5 more minutes. Now 5 more. Now 5 more. Aaron would eventually get up, and I'd pee and force myself to interact with him, to get breakfast and hold down a few bites. Nia would ask me, "You all right, man?" And one Saturday morning, while Aaron was out getting coffee, I told her no. "What's wrong?" I sighed. "I got really depressed this year. I'm on medication." "Craig! Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry." She came over and hugged me with her little body. "I know what it's like." "You do?"
I hugged back. I'm not a crier. I just look it. I'm a hugger. Cheesy, I know. I held the hug as long as I could before it got awkward.
"Yeah. I'm on Prozac."
"No way!"
I pulled back from her.
"You should have told me."
"You should have told me. We're like partners in illness."
"We're the illest." I got up.
"What are you on?"
she asked.
"Zoloft."
"That's for wimps."
She stuck her tongue out. She had a ring.
"The really messed up people are on Prozac."
"Do you see a therapist?" I wanted to say shrink, but it sounded funny out loud.
"Twice a week."
She smiled.
"Jesus, what is wrong with us?" "I don't know."
She started dancing. There wasn't any music on, but when Nia wanted to dance, she danced.
We're just part of that messed-up generation of American kids who are on drugs all the time.
I don't think so. I don't think we're any more messed up than anybody before.
Craig, like 80% of the people I know are on medication, for ADD or whatever.
I knew, too, but I didn't like to think about that. Maybe it was stupid and solipsistic, but I liked to think about me. I didn't want to be part of some trend. I wasn't doing this for a fashion statement.
I don't know if they really need it, I said.
I really need it.
You think you're the only one?
Not that I'm the only one, just that it's a personal thing.
Okay, fine, Craig.
She stopped dancing.
I won't mention it then.
What?
Jesus, you know why you're messed up? It's because you don't have a connection with other people.
That's not true.
Here I am, I just told you I have the same problem as you.
It might not be the same. I had no idea what Nia had. She might have manic depression. Manic depression was much cooler than actual depression, because you got the manic parts. I read that they rocked. It was so unfair.
See? This is what I mean. You put these walls up.
What walls?
How many people have you told that you're depressed?
My mom, my dad, my sister, doctors.
What about Aaron?
He doesn't need to know. How many people have you told?
Of course Aaron needs to know. He's your best friend.
I looked at her.
I think Aaron has a lot of problems too, Craig.
Nia sat down next to me.
I think he could really benefit from going on some medication, but he'd never admit it. Maybe if you told him, he would.
Have you told him?
No.
See?
Anyway, we know each other too well.
Who?
Me and you? Or you and Aaron?
Maybe all of us.
I don't think so. I'm glad I know you, and I'm glad I know him. You can call me, you know, if you're feeling down.
Thanks. I actually don't have your new number.
Here.
And she gave it to me. A magical number. I put it with her name in all caps on my phone. This is a girl who can save me, I thought. The therapists told you that you needed to find happiness within yourself before you got it from another person. But I had a feeling that if Aaron were off the face of the earth, and I was the one holding Nia at night and breathing on her, I'd be pretty happy. We both would be. At home, I got through the bad episodes by lying on the couch and drinking water brought from my parents, turning the electric blanket on to get warm and sweating it out. I wanted to tell people my depression is acting up today as an excuse for not seeing them, but I never managed to pull it off. It would have been hilarious. After a few days, I'd get up off the couch and return to the Craig who didn't need to make excuses for himself. Around those times, I would call Nia to tell her I was feeling better, and she would tell me she was feeling good too. Maybe we were in sync. And I told her not to tease me. And she would smile over the phone and say, "But I'm so good at it." In March, as I had 8 pills left of my final refill, I started thinking that I didn't need the Zoloft anymore. I was better. Okay, maybe I wasn't better, but I was okay. It was a weird feeling, a lack of weight in my head. I had caught up in my classes. I had found Dr. Minerva, the 6th one that Dr. Barney and I tried, and found her quiet, no-nonsense attitude amenable to my issues. I was still getting 93s, but what the hell? Someone had to get them. What was I doing taking pills? I had just had a little problem and freaked out and needed some time to adjust. Anyone could have a problem starting a new school. I probably never needed to go to a doctor in the first place. What, because I threw up? I wasn't throwing up anymore. Some days I wouldn't eat. But back in biblical times, people did that all the time. Fasting was a big part of religion, Mom told me. We were already so fat in America. Did I need to be part of the problem? So when I ran out of the final bottle of Zoloft, I didn't take any more. I didn't call Dr. Barney either. I just threw the bottle away and said, "Okay, if I ever feel bad again, I'll remember how good I felt that night on the Brooklyn Bridge." Pills were for wimps, and this was over. I was done. I was back to me. But things come full circle, baby. And 2 months later, I was back in my bathroom, bowing to the toilet in the dark. Part 3. Badoom. Chapter 14. My parents are outside, hearing me retch up the dinner I just ate with them. I look at the door. I think I can hear Dad chewing the last bite he took when he got up from the table. "Craig, should we call someone?" Mom asks. "Is it an emergency?" "No," I say, getting up. "I'm going to be all right."
"Hey, yeah, I told your mom not to make the squash," Dad jokes.
"Heh," I say, climbing to the sink. I wash out my mouth with water, and then mouthwash, and then more water. My parents pepper me with questions. "Do you want us to call Dr. Barney?"
"Do you want us to call Dr. Minerva?"
"Do you want some tea?"
"Tea? Give the man some water. You want water?"
I turn on the light. "Oh, he had the light off. Are you okay, Craig? Did you slip?" I look at myself in the bathroom light. Yes, I'm okay. I'm okay because I have a plan and a solution. I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to do it tonight. This is such a farce, this whole thing. I thought I was better, and I'm not better. I tried to get stable, and I can't get stable. I tried to turn the corner, and there aren't any corners. I can't eat. I can't sleep. I'm just wasting resources. It's going to be tough on my parents. So tough. And my little sister. Such a beautiful, smart girl. Not a dud like me, that's for sure. It'll be hard to leave her. Not to mention it might mess her up. Plus, my parents will think they're such failures. They'll blame themselves. It'll be the most important event in their lives. The thing that gets whispered by other parents at parties when their backs are turned. Did you hear about their son? Teen suicide. They'll never get over it. I don't know how anyone could. They must not have known the warning signs. But you know what? It's time for me to stop putting other people's emotions ahead of my own. It's time for me to be true to myself, like the pop stars say. And my true self wants to blast off this rock. I'll do it tonight. Late tonight. In the morning, specifically. I'll get up and bike to the Brooklyn Bridge and throw myself off it. Before I go, though, I'll sleep in Mom's bed for one final night. She lets me sleep there when I'm feeling bad, even though I'm too old. Dad'll sleep in the living room. There's plenty of space by her, and it's not like we touch or anything. She's just available to bring me warm milk and cereal. Tonight is something I owe her. Her only son spending time with her before he goes. I'd be heartless not to. I'll hug my dad, too, and my sister. But I'm not leaving any notes. What kind of crap is that? "I'm okay," I say, unlocking the bathroom door and stepping out. My parents corner me in a hug that mimics the one at Aaron's blowout party, when we were confirming that our futures were bright. "We love you, Craig," Mom says. "This is true," Dad says. I say. With Dr. Minerva, I talk about my tentacles and anchors. "Here's something for you, Doctor. My parents are now part of the tentacles, and my friends, too. My tentacles have tentacles, and I'm never going to cut them off. But my anchor, that's easy. It's killing myself. That's what gets me through the day, knowing that I could do it, that I'm strong enough to do it, and I can get it done." "Can I sleep in your bed tonight?" I ask Mom.
"Sure, honey, of course."
Dad nods at me. "I'm ready for bed, then." I go into my room and pull out clothes to sleep in, stash another pile to die in. I'll get them when I leave in the morning. Mom announces that she's making some warm milk, and it'll help me sleep. I go to my sister's room. She's up, sketching a kitchen at her desk. "I love you, little girl," I tell her.
"Are you okay?"
she responds.
"Yeah." "You threw up."
"You heard?"
"It was like, ah, rah, blah. Of course I heard."
"I turned the water on."
"I have good ears." She points to her ears.
"You do good throw-up impressions, too," I say.
"Yeah."
She turns back to her sketch.
"Maybe when I grow up I could be like a stand-up comedian and just get on stage and make those noises."
"No," I say.
What you could do, or what I could do, since I'm so good at it, is get up on stage and actually throw up, and people would pay to watch, like I was a professional vomiter.
Craig, that is so gross.
But I don't think it's gross. I think it's kind of a good idea. How does performance art get started, after all? Don't let that distract you, soldier.
Right, I won't.
You've made your decision and you're sticking to it, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
The point of you being in this room is to say goodbye to your sister, is that not right?
Absolutely, sir.
I'm sorry to see it come to this, soldier. I thought you had promise. But you gotta do what you gotta do. And sometimes you gotta commit harakiri, you know?
Yes, sir.
I hug Sarah. You're very sweet and smart, and you have great ideas. Stick with them.
Of course.
She looks at me.
What's wrong with you?
I'm okay.
You're bad. Don't try and fool me.
I'll be all right tomorrow.
Okay. You like my kitchen?
She holds it up. It's practically a blueprint, with the swinging quarter circles for doors and the sink and refrigerator outlined in crisp bird's-eye detail. It looks like something someone would pay for.
It's amazing, Sarah. Thanks. What are you doing now?
I'm going to sleep early.
Feel better.
I leave her room. Mom already has the warm milk for me and my place all set up in her bed.
You feeling better?
Sure.
Are you really, Craig?
Yes, geez, sure.
Lean back on the pillows.
I get in her bed. The mattress is firm and real. I scrunch my feet under the covers and savor that feeling. Fresh linen over your feet, bunching up in little mountain ranges. That's a feeling everyone can enjoy. Mom hands me the milk.
It's only 9 o'clock, Craig. You're not going to be able to go to sleep.
I'll read.
Good. Tomorrow we'll schedule something with Dr. Barney to help you. Maybe you need new medicine.
Maybe. I sit and drink the warm milk and think nothing. It's a talent I've developed, one thing I've learned recently, how to think nothing. Here's the trick. Don't have any interest in the world around you. Don't have any hope for the future, and be warm. Damn, though. There's someone else I should call. I pick the cell out of my pocket and flip it open to the name that's all caps. I hit send. Nia? I ask when she picks up.
Hi, yeah, what's up?
I wanted to talk to you.
What about?
I sigh.
Oh, are you okay, man?
No.
Where are you?
At home. I'm in my mom's bed, actually.
Whoa, we have bigger problems than we thought, Craig.
No, I'm just here because it helps me sleep. Don't you remember when you were a little kid, sleeping in your parents' bed was like such a treat?
Well, my dad died when I was 3.
Shoot, that's right. Some of us have actual things to complain about.
Right, sorry. It's okay. I slept with my mom sometimes.
But you probably don't anymore.
No, I do. Same situations as you, I bet.
Huh. What are you up to now?
Home on the computer.
Where's Aaron?
Home on his computer. What do you want, Craig?
I take a breath.
Nia, you remember the party that we had when we all figured out we got into executive pre-professional?
Yeah.
When you came to that party, did you know you were going to hook up with Aaron? Craig, we're not talking about this. Please, come on, I have to know if I had a shot. We're not. Please, pretend I'm dying. God, you are so melodramatic.
Heh, yeah.
I wore my green dress to that party, I remember that.
I remember, too.
And Aaron was very nice to me.
He sat next to you in Scrabble.
And I already knew he liked me. But I had been putting off getting involved with anyone until I knew about high school, because I didn't want it to distract me. And you and Aaron, you were like in the running. You both talked to me. But you had that mole on your chin.
What?
Remember the big hairy one? It was all pockmarked and gross.
I didn't have any mole.
Craig, I'm joking.
Oh, right, Duh. We both laugh. Hers is full. Mine, empty.
You promise not to take this the wrong way, Craig?
Sure, I lie.
If you had made a move, I would probably have, you know, gone along. But you didn't.
Death.
See, it works out, though. Now we're friends, and we can talk about stuff like this.
Sure, we can talk. Death.
Believe me, I get sick of talking with Aaron.
Why?
He's always talking about himself and his problems, like you. You're both self-centered. Only you have a low opinion of yourself, so it's tolerable. He has a really high opinion of himself. It's a pain.
Thanks, Nia. You're very sweet.
You know I try.
What if I tried now? I ask. Nothing to lose.
To what?
You know, what if I just came over and said screw it and stayed outside until you came out and grabbed you and kissed you?
Ha! You'd never do it.
What if I did?
I'd smap you.
You'd smap me?
Yeah, remember that? That was so funny.
I switch phones from ear to ear. Well, I just wanted to clear that up. I smile.
And that's true. I don't want to leave loose ends. I want to know where I stand.
I don't stand anywhere with Nia, really. Not more than friends. I missed an opportunity with her, but that's okay. I've missed many. I have a lot of regrets.
I'm worried about you, Craig, she says.
What?
Don't do anything stupid, okay?
I won't, I tell her. And that's not a lie. What I'm doing makes a lot of sense.
Call me if you think you're going to do anything stupid.
Bye, Nia, I say. And I mouth into the phone, I love you, in case some of her cells pick up on the vibrations and it serves me well in the next life. If there is one. If there is a next life, I hope it's in the past. I don't think the future will be any more handleable.
Bye, Craig.
I click end. I think it's a little harsh how the end button is red. Chapter 15. I'm pretty stupid for thinking I could get any sleep tonight. Once I turn off the lights and put the cup aside, I get the not sleeping feeling. It's kind of like feeling the four horsemen of the apocalypse rear up in your brain and put some ropes around it and pull it toward the front of your skull. They say, "No way, dude. Who did you think you were fooling? You think you were going to wake up at 3 a.m. and throw yourself off the Brooklyn Bridge without staying up all night? Give us a little credit." My mind starts the cycling. I know it's going to be the worst that it's ever been. Over and over again, a cycling of tasks, of failures, of problems. I'm young, but I'm already screwing up my life. I'm smart, but not enough. Just smart enough to have problems. Not smart enough to get good grades, not smart enough to have a girlfriend. Girls think I'm weird. I don't like to spend money. Every time I spend it, I feel as if I'm being raped. I don't like to smoke pot, but then I do smoke it and I get depressed. I haven't done enough with my life. I don't play sports. I quit Taibo. I'm not involved in any social causes. My one friend is a screw-up, a genius blessed with the most beautiful girl in the world, and he doesn't even know it. There's so much more for me to be doing. I should be a success, and I'm not, and other people, younger people, are. Younger people than me are on TV and getting paid and winning scholarships and getting their lives in order. I'm still a nobody. When am I going to not be a nobody? The thoughts trail one another in my brain, running from the back up to the front and dripping down again under my chin. I'm no one. I'll never make it in my life. I'm about to get revealed as a fake. I've already been revealed as a fake, but I don't know it yet. I know I'm a fake and pretend not to. All the good thoughts, the normal ones, the ones that have occasionally surfaced since last fall, scramble out the front of my brain in terror of what lives in my neck and spine. This is the worst it'll ever be. My homework swims in front of my closed eyes. The intro to Wall Street's stock-picking game, the Inca history paper, the ding-dong math test, they appear as if on a gravestone. They'll all be over soon. Mom climbs into bed next to me. That means it's still early, not even 11. It's going to be such a long night. Jordan, the dog who should be dead, climbs into bed with her, and I put my hand on him.
try to feel his warmth and take comfort from it. He barks at me. I turn on my stomach. My sweat drenches my pillow. I turn over on my back. It drenches it in the other direction. I turn on my side like a baby. Do babies sweat? How about in the womb? Do you sweat in there? This night will never end. Mom stirs.
Craig, are you still up?
Yes.
It's 12:30. Do you want cereal? Sometimes a bowl of cereal will just knock you out.
Sure.
Cheerios?
I think I can handle Cheerios. Mom gets up and gets them for me. The bowl is heaping, and I tackle it with a ferocity that I think a last meal deserves, shoving it all in me as if it owes me loot. I'm not going to throw this up. Mom starts breathing regularly next to me. I start to think practically about how I'm going to handle this. I'm taking my bike, I know that. That's one thing I'll miss, riding around Brooklyn on the weekends like a maniac, dodging cars and trucks and vans with pipes sticking out of them, meeting Ronnie and then locking the bikes up by the subway station to go to Aaron's house. Riding a bike is pure and simple. Ronnie says he thinks it's mankind's greatest invention, and although I thought that was stupid at first, these days I'm not so sure. Mom won't let me take the bike to school, so I've never ridden over a bridge. This will be the first time. I don't think I'll wear my helmet. I'll take the bike, and it'll be a warm spring night. I'll speed up Flatbush Avenue, the artery of fat Brooklyn, right to the Brooklyn entrance of the bridge, with the potholes and cops stationed all night. They won't look at me twice. What, it's illegal, a kid biking over a bridge? I'll go up the ramp and get right to the middle, where I was before. And then I'll walk out over the roadway and take one last look at the Verrazano Bridge. What am I going to do about my bike, though? If I lock it up, it'll just stay there at the side of the bridge as evidence, and they'll clip the lock or saw through the chain after a while. It's an expensive chain. But if I don't lock it up, someone'll take it quickly. It's a good bike, a Raleigh, and there won't be any evidence that I was ever even there. I can't lose the bike, I decide. I'll take the key with me when I go down, and Mom and Dad will know then where I've gone. The cops will find the bike and tell them. It'll be harsh, but at least they'll know. It'll be better than not leaving anything. What time is it? Time has stopped for me. Since I can't sleep and I'm still sweating, I decide I can try something to knock myself out. Push-ups. I don't want to go to sleep. I just want to exhaust myself and rest a little bit so I can make the trip at the appropriate time, in an hour or so. I prop myself up in bed in proper push-up position, which is also proper sex position, I realize, and I haven't even had sex. I'm going to die a virgin. Does that mean I go to heaven? No, according to the Bible, suicide is a sin and I go straight to hell. What a jip. I learned push-ups in Taibo. I'm good at them. I can do them on my fingers and my fists as well as my palms. Here, next to my mom, in a scene that would look very weird if you filmed it from the side, I start to do them up and down. 1, 2, 3. I move very, very slowly so as not to wake Mom up. She's a heavy sleeper and doesn't notice my exercises. Her head is turned in the opposite direction. When I get to 10 push-ups, I start counting down. 5, 4, 3. Until I finish at 15. I collapse in bed. I'm so weak from holding down nothing but Cheerios in the last 24 hours, I'm beat. I'm cracked from 15 push-ups. But I feel something in the bed. I feel my heart beating. It's beating against the mattress, amplified, resounding not only in the bed but in my body. I feel it in my feet, my legs, my stomach, my arms, beating everywhere. I get on my palms again. 1, 2, 3. My arms burn. My neck cranks. A bed isn't the best place to do push-ups. You tend to sink in. This set is tougher than the last. But when I get to 15, I keep going, to 20. I strain and hold back a grunt on the final one, and discharge myself to the mattress. Badoom, badoom, badoom.
My heart is ramming now. It's beating everywhere. It hits all the spots in my body, and I feel the blood pressuring through me, my wrists, my fingers, my neck. It wants to do this, to Badoom away all the time. It's such a silly little thing, the heart. Badoom. It feels good, the way it cleans me. Badoom. Screw it. I want my heart. I want my heart, but my brain is acting up. I want to live, but I want to die. What do I do? I get out of bed, glance at the clock. It's 5:07. I don't know how I got through the night. My heart radiates Badoom, so I stand and shuffle into the living room and pick a book off my parents' shelf. It's called How to Survive the Loss of a Love. It has a pink and green cover. It sold like 2 million copies. It's one of these psychology books that people everywhere buy to get through breakups. My mom bought it when her dad died and raved about how good it was. She showed the cover to me. I looked at it just to see what it was about, and the first chapter said, "If you feel like harming yourself right now, turn to page 20." And I thought that was pretty silly, like a choose-your-own-adventure book. So I turned to page 20, and right there it said to call your local suicide hotline, because suicidal thoughts were a medical situation and you needed medical help right away. Now, in the dark, I open How to Survive the Loss of a Love to page 20. Every municipality has a suicide hotline, and they're listed right in the government services section of the yellow pages, it says. Okay. I go into the kitchen and open up the yellow pages. It's a pain in the ass to find those government listings. I thought they were marked with green pages, but the green pages turn out to be a restaurant guide. The government listings are in blue at the front, but it's all phone numbers for where to get your car if it's towed, what to do if your block has a rat problem. Ah, here. Health. Poison control. Emergency. Mental health. There are a bunch of numbers. The first one says suicide near it. It's a local number, and I call. I stand in the living room with my hand in my pants as the phone rings. Chapter 16. Hello? Hi, is this the suicide hotline? This is the Brooklyn Anxiety Management Center. We work with the Samaritans. We handle New York suicide hotline calls when they overflow. This is Keith speaking. So the suicide hotline is too busy right now? Yes, it's Friday night. This is our busiest time. Great. I'm common even in suicide. What seems to, be the problem? I'm very depressed and I want to kill myself. Uh-huh. What's your name? Need a fake name. Scott. And how old are you, Scott? 15. And why do you want to kill yourself? I'm clinically depressed, you know. I mean, I'm not just down or whatever. I started this new school and I can't handle it. It's gotten to a point where it's the worst it's ever been and I just don't want to deal with it anymore. You say you're clinically depressed? Are you taking medication? I was taking Zoloft. And what happened? I stopped taking it. That's probably, you know, a bad idea. Keith sounds like he's just getting started with this whole counseling thing. I picture a thin, college-age guy with wire-rimmed glasses at a desk lit up with a small reading lamp looking out the window, nodding at the good deeds he's doing. A lot of people run into problems when they, you know, stop taking their medication. Well, whatever the reason, I just really can't handle it right now. Do you have a plan for how you would kill yourself? Yes. I'd jump off the Brooklyn Bridge. I hear Keith typing something. Well, Scott, we aren't the suicide hotline, but if you like, we have a 5-step exercise for managing anxiety. Would you like to try it? Sure. Can you get a pen and a piece of paper? I go to the drawers in the dining room and get a pencil and paper. I take it to the bathroom and sit on the toilet with Keith. The light's on. First, okay, write down an event that happened to you, that you experienced. Any event? That's right. Okay. I write on the piece of paper,
ate pizza last week. Do you have it? Keith asks.
Yes. Now write down, how you felt about that event.
Okay.
I write, felt good, full.
Now write down any shoulds or woulds that you felt about the event.
Like what?
Things that you regret about it. Things that you feel would have made it go better.
Wait, I don't think I have the right kind of event.
I furiously erase my first statement, which is marked 1. Instead of ate pizza, I put down threw up mom's squash, and then for 2, I write felt like I wanted to kill myself, all the while telling Keith to hold on, I messed up.
Just put down shoulds and woulds, he reassures me.
Well, I should have held down the squash, and I would have been full if I had. I put that down.
Now put down only what you actually had to do in the event.
What I had to do?
Right, because there are no such things as shoulds and woulds in the universe.
There aren't?
I'm starting to suspect Keith a bit. For someone in anxiety management, he's giving me an exercise that is fairly confusing and anxiety-provoking.
No, he says. There are only things that could have turned out differently.
You don't have any shoulds or woulds in your life, see? You only have things that could have gone a different way.
Ah.
You never know what truly would have happened if you had done your shoulds and woulds. Your life might have turned out worse. Isn't that possible?
I don't see how it's really possible, seeing as I'm on the phone with you.
What you really have in life are needs, and you only have 3 needs, food, water, and shelter.
And air, I think, and friends, and money, and your mind.
So the next step in the process is to put down only what you actually had to do in your event, and then compare it to the shoulds and woulds you assigned yourself.
How many steps are in this thing?
5.
The 5th is the most important. We're at 4.
You know, I really, I look at the piece of paper, covered with half-erased scribblings about pizza and squash.
I think I should talk to the suicide hotline people, because I still feel really bad.
All right, Keith sighs. I'm worried that he thinks he's done a bad job, so I tell him,
it's okay. You've been really helpful.
It's tough with young people, he says.
It's just tough.
Have you called 1-800-SUICIDE?
1-800-SUICIDE? Of course. I should have known. This is America. Everyone has a 1-800 number.
That's Helpline. They're national.
Then there's local suicide watch.
Keith gives another number.
Thanks.
I write them both down.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Scott, he says.
I hit off.
These are the first calls I've made not on the cell phone in a long time, and type in 1-800-SUICIDE.
It's really convenient that suicide has 7 letters, I think.
Hello?
A woman answers.
Hi,
I give her the rap, just like I gave Keith.
This woman's name is Maritza.
So you stopped taking your Zoloft?
She asks.
Yes.
You know, you should be on that for a couple months, really.
I was on it for a couple months.
Some people stay on it for years, at least 4 to 9 months.
Well, I know, but I felt better.
Okay, so how do you feel right now?
I want to kill myself.
Okay, Scott. Now, you know you're very young, and you sound very accomplished.
Thanks.
I know high school can be tough.
It's not that tough. I just can't handle it.
Are your parents aware of how you're feeling?
They know I'm bad. They're asleep right now.
Where are you?
I'm in the bathroom.
At your house?
Yes.
You live with them?
Yeah.
You know, when you want to commit suicide, we consider that a medical emergency. Did you know that?
An emergency.
If you feel like that, you need to go to the hospital, okay?
I do.
Yes, you go right to the emergency room, and they'll take care of you. They know just how to handle it.
The emergency room?
I haven't been in the emergency room since I got clipped by a sled and knocked myself out in the park in grade school. Blood was coming out of one ear, and when I woke up it was like I'd slept for 3 days and I wasn't quite sure what year it was. They kept me overnight,
sent me through an MRI to make sure my brain wasn't dented, and sent me home.
Are you going to go to the emergency room, Scott?
Would you like us to call 911 for you? If you're unable to get to the emergency room, we can send an ambulance for you.
No, that's not necessary.
I do not need the neighbors seeing me carted off. Besides, I never realized, but I'm right next to a hospital. It's 2 blocks away. A tall gray building with big tanks of frozen oxygen out front and construction vehicles constantly adding new wings. Arginon Hospital. I can walk there from here. It might even feel good. And once I get there, I won't have to do anything. I'll just tell them what's wrong with me and they'll give me medicine. Probably they'll give me some kind of new pill. Maybe they've invented that fast-acting Zoloft by now. And I'll come right back home. Mom and Dad won't even know.
Scott?
I'm going. I have to...
You have to put on your clothes?
Right. That's great. That's wonderful. You're doing the right thing.
Okay.
You're very young. We don't want to lose you. You're being very strong right now.
Thanks. I find my shoes. No, pants first. I put on my khaki pants. The only shoes I can find are my dress shoes, worn to Dr. Minerva's office this afternoon, a lifetime ago. They're Rockports, shiny and beveled.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm just getting my hoodie.
I pull it off the hook and flip it on. I grab the phone again.
Okay. You're very brave, Scott.
Thanks.
You're going to the hospital, right?
What hospital?
Arginon.
They're wonderful there. I'm proud of you, Scott. This is the right thing to do.
Thank you, Maritza. Thank you.
I hang up the phone and walk out the door. Jordan comes toddling out just as I'm leaving, cocks his head at me. He doesn't bark.
Part 4. Hospital. Chapter 17. The emergency room is nearly abandoned at 5:30 in the morning. I don't know how I caught that lucky break. There's a long black metal bench sprinkled with people. A Hispanic couple walks around, the woman howling about her knee. An old white lady and her gigantic son fill out forms next to each other. A black guy with glasses sits at the end of the bench, opening peanuts and putting the shells in his left vest pocket, the peanuts in his right. It could be a plain old doctor's office, really, except for the peanut guy. I walk up to the main desk, registration. There are two registrators, one sitting and one standing behind. The one behind looks about my age. She's probably getting school credit.
I need to be, admitted.
Registered, I say.
Fill out a form and the nurse will see you shortly,
the sitting one says. The standing one stuffs envelopes, eyes me. Do I know her from somewhere? I sniff my armpit to hide my face. I take the Xeroxed form that's handed to me. It asks my birth date and address, my parents' names and phone numbers, my health insurance. I don't know much about health insurance, but I know that my Social Security number is my ID number, so I put that down. I feel kind of good filling out the form, like I'm applying to a special academy. I put the form, completed, in a small black tray hanging off the side of the registration desk. There's only one piece of paper in front of mine. I sit back down next to Peanut Man. I stare at the floor. It's made up of foot-long tiles in red and white, like a chessboard, and I imagine how a knight would move across it. I'm so crazy. I've lost it. This isn't going to help. I should leave. Is it too late? My bike is back at home in my hallway. I can do it. I'm strong enough.
Craig?
A woman pops her head out from a door at the end of registration. I stand up. The Hispanic couple howls that they were here first, and someone comes out to talk to them in Spanish. Sorry, people.
Come, she beckons. I'm the nurse.
I shake her hand.
Have a seat.
I enter her long, thin chamber, which has a computer and 2 chairs and an array of tubes and robes on hooks on the wall. The sun is rising through a window at the end of the room. Across from me is a poster about domestic violence.
If your man beats you, forces you to have sex, controls your money, or threatens you about immigration papers, you are a victim.